I appreciate the invitation to come and be on the program, even though it is on the tail end of it. And I hope I'll not be represented as being the tail end as much as I'm on the tail end. I appreciate the fact that the elders permitted this. I figured up some time ago, a few Sundays ago, I think, you don't really think about how many sermons you've preached until you get into a situation like this. I've preached almost 1,500 sermons, not counting the radio and the newspaper articles in this congregation. So I know they're not expecting anything new, and besides that, I don't have anything new really to offer, because I don't think it is the new things that keep people interested. I don't think it is the exciting things like that. I think it's just simply, as we've heard time and time again during this lectureship, that it's the plain, pure, simple Word of God. Our Lord used very few words, really, that were more than a couple of syllables. And so we need perhaps to take a lesson from that. I appreciate Emmanuel inviting me to be on the program, too. We share some of the work, of course, but he's done a magnificent job in directing the school. We love him and his family. And we appreciate all that the elders have done and are doing, and we're looking forward to seeing many great things. I understand we have a visiting potential student with us today. I wish we had a dozen more, and I hope that we will have before too long. Emmanuel prides himself in giving fellow subjects for which there are a great many scripture in which the words appear. He missed it this time. He gave me the responsibility of solidifying the home with godly grandparents. The word grandfather doesn't even appear in the King James Version or in several other translations. The word grandmother only appears one time in the King James translation. So you see, my sermon ought to be short if that was all there was. But he reminded you today that the Bible does speak of children's children are the crown of old men. I guess that's Proverbs 17:6. I guess that would be grandparents, wouldn't it? Great-grandparents. On down the line, grandparents are important. They're more important, I believe, than society is recognizing today. Children are important. I'm glad, incidentally, that if I haven't miscounted, three of ours are here today, one of the boys and two of the girls, and I appreciate it. And a half a dozen of the grandkids. The Apostle Paul to Timothy declared, "When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt in thy grandmother Lois and in thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also," I believe there's a great deal more in this verse than we sometimes recognize. Unfeigned faith. Faith that is not stage acting. Faith that isn't hypocritical. Faith that is not pretentious. Faith that doesn't suggest to the children or the grandchildren, "Oh, I really believe in the Lord." Never show up to services. "I really believe in Jesus Christ, but I'm not willing to submit to his commandments. I really believe that there's a God, but I've turned my back on him and I'm not aiming to do anything differently." Is a hypocritical faith. Paul didn't see that in Timothy's grandmother. I don't know what he saw in his grandfather. Bible doesn't tell us much about it except that he was a Greek. He saw these good things in his mother been passed on. Many times that's the case. Obviously, the Holy Spirit considered this a very, very vital matter, important in some way to Timothy. Even if the grandfather isn't mentioned, we're able to see in the Bible the great influence wielded by both good and bad grandfathers. And incidentally, I read somewhere not long ago that in 30 AD the average age was about 30. That'd make some pretty young grandfathers, wouldn't it? Perhaps. In 1911, the figure had jumped to 46. In 1950, it had raised to 68. In 1972, it was 71. In 1975, the average age was 76. And I read somewhere that it increased a little even since that. The point is this. There are more older people in the church, in the world, and in the church today than ever before in the history of mankind. Obviously, many of those are grandparents. Now, I hear sometimes fathers and mothers saying, I just can't wait until Johnny's 18 and gone. And I've heard some grandparents say, oh, it'll be so good when the kids are raised and they get their own kids and they've had those kids back and they've had their grandkids back and they'll say, I'll be glad when the grandkids is gone. I think that's a mistake for Christian godly parents. Not that they don't want them to be reared well and to become the kind of men and women they want, but I believe there's an attitude perhaps involved in this that is unchristian. I didn't want my children to stay at home all their lives. And I was happy when I understood that they were getting married well, I thought. I'd be just as happy and was just as happy when some of the grandchildren reached the point and the age in their lives when they married and married well. I'd hate to see them marry in a way that would be uncomplimentary to them especially and would cause them to lose their souls, which indeed may well occur. But I have never felt that I wanted to see just how soon I could get them out of the house and get rid of them and rid myself of the responsibility of them. As a matter of fact, I think there's a certain amount of responsibility that accompanies us right down to the last day we have on earth, regardless of whether it is our children or our grandchildren. And I intend to try to know my place in both of these situations. But I also intend to make myself available to them in order to help them live the kind of life, do the kind of things that please God, that will enable us someday all to enjoy heaven. I hope God will help me succeed in that. Godly grandparents show godly love. It is not partial love. I've heard a grandparent say, you know, this one is extra special. Perhaps it was a little boy, and they hadn't had very many boys in the family. Or maybe it was a beautiful little girl, and they'd say, you know, she's just extra special. And they'd become obsessed with one or the other of those children. I think that's not the kind of godly love that ought to be expressed to children or to grandchildren. The firstborn may be the favorite among the boys or the girls or among the grandsons and granddaughters. Solomon said, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted ox and hatred without. And I have seen grandparents whom I thought hated some of their grandchildren. Lavishing material things upon those children with the idea in mind, this is the way we express our love. The materialism. I love you, and so I give you these things, anything you want. I go into some homes and there isn't room scarcely for a bed, but there are toys on top of toys piled up all around the wall and sometimes in the furniture to the point where you can't sit down. Parents make the mistake of bestowing lavishly insignificant, trivial things upon their children, and so do grandparents sometimes. Now, Florence and I we've already started 3 months ago buying a gift for the grandkids. Takes that long when you have 23 and 11 great-grandchildren. And, of course, if you don't buy the kids something, they feel left out, too. But we try to buy them things that they need. If one of them's having a rough time, we go to the store and we get him a box of groceries. If the parents have found it difficult to get along, we buy them some socks and some shoes or things of that. I don't like to buy toys anymore. I like to help people. And I feel that that's the best way to help them. And I believe that I can show my love for them. I like to help them get to the services and understand the Bible and sit in the car and sing. We started from Moundsville a while back with the twins. And we had a tape on, and it was one of those gospel tapes, and I've forgotten the name of the song. But in the chorus of it, it says, "It's all right, it's all right." Now almost every time we go anywhere, one of those kids gets to sing, "It's all right, it's all right." Well, those are things that we remember that are loving things. Godly grandparents and discipline go hand in hand. Permissiveness will not correctly be credited to grandparents any more than it ought to be to parents. Most everybody enjoys children who act courteously and submissively and obediently. Grandparents can best show their love for the grandchildren in supporting a good discipline program that the parents have initiated. Don't take sides against the parents, at least in front of the kids. Don't let them know that. Parents may have made a mistake. They may need some guidance. They might need a little advice. But don't do it in front of those children. You'll undermine the authority of the parents when that is done. I heard it said of a Grammy some time ago, "If mommy and daddy get too hard on you, you get on the phone and call me. If daddy spanks you, I'll call the police and have him arrested." That was supposed to be a Christian mother. It'd be a little difficult to solidify the home with godly grandparents in a situation like that, wouldn't it? At least it would for me. While one doesn't enjoy witnessing a child receive correction, discipline is certainly necessary to the welfare of the child, whether son or daughter, grandson or granddaughter. It is gross injustice to children to allow them to grow up without proper guidance and correction. Some may not accept it, but they need to have that guidance and correction. Rather, we ought to thank God, and I do, when my sons and my daughters understand and exercise the instruction of the Lord to train their children to obey their parents, for this is right. Loving encouragement should be a part of showing love for children, for grandchildren. Paul reminded the church in 1 Thessalonians 2:11 and 12 how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you. How did you do it, Paul? As a father doth his children. that ye should walk worthy of God who hath called you as his children. That ye should walk worthy of God who hath called you as his children. That ye should walk worthy of God who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory. Whether it's in Bible study or at school or doing the chores at home or in reference to their parents or at the church services, wherever it is, grandfathers, godly grandfathers and grandmothers will encourage their sons and daughters to expect their children obey your parents. Godly grandparents know that there is not any wall that will isolate those children from wickedness, from sin. The old cliche, you only go around once, oh, you've got to have some fun while you're young, is just as out of place for grandparents or more than it is for parents. And yet I have known grandparents who would call their grandkids to their homes and provide them with some sort of entertainment or recreation on the sly, which they knew was not in keeping with the discipline of their children's homes. This undermines the kind of godliness that ought to characterize the homes of Christian families. Don't do it. Support those children in their discipline. Help them to do the things that they need to do. Oh, everybody's doing it. No, they're not. If we're in an environment of Christian families, not everybody in the church is doing it. Probably the majority are not. The kids that are trained in those homes, they are trying to do the things that they have been taught to. Perhaps peer pressure may overcome them on occasion, but I verily believe that the majority of our children in the congregation are trying to do what they know is right and rejecting the idea that everybody's doing it, and we, in order to be popular, are going to have to do it too. It isn't so. And if it were so, and you turn out to be the only grandchild I have that has refused to accommodate the suggestions of the world about you, I'll be happy. It may well be that you'll have to stand alone. And grandchildren, those of you who are old enough to understand, and children, don't deceive your parents by allowing your grandchildren to engage secretly in that which is displeasing to the parents. Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they should fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Deuteronomy 5:29. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7 says, "And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine air," talking about the commandments, "and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes." Giving instruction, providing the things that the children need and the grandchildren need, is a pleasurable thing when we learn and understand the worth of it to those children. Chapter 11 and verse 18. "Therefore shall we lay up these words, these my words, in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes, and ye shall teach them, your children, Speaking to them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house, and upon thy gates. Now why? That your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them as the days of heaven upon the earth. Godly worship demands godly respect of grandchildren. A common complaint that I receive from a great many people, sometimes from visitors who come to the assembly, is the fact that the kids are so noisy and raucous. I've seen them sometimes get under the seat and crawl from the back to the front on the floor. Or get out in the aisle and thump around. Or in the parents' hands, they'll be playing. Or somebody mentioned the other day that they saw somebody braiding the hair of some child during the time of worship. That isn't the time to braid hair. Or we bring them all kinds of entertainment. I sat down in a meeting house not long ago. There was a stack of coloring books that high on the end of the seat. I wonder what have the kids been doing. I soon saw what has been going on after the service started. They were running from one end to the other and out and in repeatedly, disrupting the worship. Godly grandparents, along with godly parents, teach children to respect the place of worship and worship God. I don't think it takes coloring books. I don't think it takes Play-Doh. I don't think it takes Cheerios. I think it takes the same thing for those children, generally, that it takes for you and me. A psalm book. Teach those little fellows to sit up with a psalm book. Open it up for them to the page. They don't know what's there. That's true. Encourage them to sing with you. You'd be surprised what they'll do in a few weeks. When you bow in prayer, teach these little fellows, little girls and little boys, we've come here to pray. We're approaching God's throne. You bow your head. You show the kind of respect that is due to the awesome God of the universe. And when they get older, they won't be expecting all this entertainment. We're training them to expect entertainment. We're teaching them that it's like being on the ball field. Get up and leave whenever you want to. Mess around wherever you want. Do whatever you want in the assembly. And teach them and encourage them to listen to the preacher. Well, they won't understand it all. But I tell you, when I was a kid, 5 years old, I remember so well going to the old Vienna meeting house in Vienna, West Virginia, with dad and mother and granddad and grandmother and my uncles and aunts and everybody else was there. We'd sit there, dad and mother would usually get on the front seat or the next to the front seat, and it didn't bother them a bit if I got a little restless. Now, I wasn't talking. Restless. Sit and listen to those fellows. Engage in mutual education. One fellow would get up and he'd talk 15 minutes and sit down and wait 5 minutes. Another fellow would get up and talk 15 minutes, and that might go on for an hour and a half. And I got fidgety. And Mom had a cure for that. She'd reach over and grab me by the leg, and I'll tell you, I soon learned that I needed to be mutually edified. And I learned things. I think I learned in those very formative years, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. I think I learned from those incidents that one church is all there is. Over the years, and when I'm talking about this discipline in the church, I verily believe that parents and grandparents need to encourage the kind of discipline that shows a regard for God that is holy and honorable and respectful and awesome. You know where it starts? It starts at home. Now, I don't mean the children shouldn't play at home. I don't mean they shouldn't play outside, play basketball, wrestle, do whatever they want to. But they need to be taught to regard and respect the authority of their parents at home. I went in the home several years ago. Little fellow was 4 or 5 years old. And Dad brought, which was an unusual experience for him, he brought a little sack of candy home. And Mother placed it on top of the cupboard, and little fellow saw it. And he went over, and there was a brand new cabinet, oak hutch, and he climbed that hutch. And Mama said, no, don't get up there. He just kept on going. No, you mustn't climb to the top and get the candy. And he just right on up. And he grabbed that candy, and she grabbed him off the hutch at the same time, and he turned around, set the candy down on the hutch, took both fists, and hit his mother on the face as hard as he could. He wasn't my son, he wasn't my grandson, he wasn't my great-grandson. But I'd have liked for him to have been for a few minutes. And then take that boy to church. Johnny, you sit up and behave. Well, he isn't going to do it. Why? Well, he doesn't mind anything at home. He has no respect for authority anyplace. Grandparents, if your children are not encouraging your grandchildren to be respectful and devoted to God in your devotions at home, they're sure not going to do it at church. I've seen kids in the store, been ashamed of them sometimes, heard one squealing not long ago, hear it all over the store. Mom said, I can't do anything about it. I want to relate a few personal experiences that I think helped me. First of all, most of our grandparents on Florence's side and mine were members of the church. My great-grandfather was Cyrus Dotson back in Buck Run near Pennsboro, West Virginia. I didn't see him but a time or two before he died. But my grandparents on both sides were both faithful members of the church, all faithful members of the church. Grandpa on the mother's side was not as diligent about it as on the other side, but Grandma was. And during the Great Depression, that grandfather dug his living out of the ground. Had a little old farm, about 75 acres, as I recall, hillside farm, but he dug his living literally out of the earth. Oh, it was a pleasure to go to the farm. Mom and Dad moved to Parkersburg when I was a year old. I lived in town all of my life, and we had a small lot, not much place to go in those early days. My sister died when I was 8 years of age. She was 7, and Mom and Dad believed that they were helping me to allow me to go to the farm with Grandpa and Grandma in the summertime for a week or two, which suited me fine. I learned a lot of things. I wouldn't use those things today, wouldn't have any occasion to. My grandmother taught me how to pick the peas and how to shell those peas. They tasted a lot better when that was done. She taught me how to gather the food. Granddad said, go get the cows. I learned how to drive those cows. I can get them to go just about anywhere I want. I wasn't very big. I rode the horse to the gristmill. Well, that was a rough one. It was 5 miles over there. No saddle. I thought it was fun then. And it was till we got about halfway back. Grandfather had the corn ground and the wheat ground, and he would take it to the upstairs and put it in the barrels. Then he might sell a calf, and he'd go get some refined flour, you know, in bags. Oh, I suppose 15 or 20 cents a 25-pound bag. And it was a long time before I knew what he was talking about when he said he was buying 15 barrels of flour. and stacking them in the upstairs room. Bags of flour. What is it? Four bags to a barrel, isn't it? Well, anyhow, he had barrels of flour, barrels of ground corn to make cornbread, and all those things. I had learned what it was for people to live off the land. I think I could do it if I had to. Granddad didn't really think that God meant him when God said to Elijah, "The barrel of meal shall not waste." He expected those who were in the household, even if visiting, to hoe the corn, to do the things that were necessary to do in order to help make the living. I learned some things from that. Our boys learned some things from their granddad. They'd go to the farm occasionally, and they'd go out in the field, and I remember Grandpa telling one time, Eddie and Denny always wanted to be with him, and he would send them home to get water. They'd both start. They'd get about halfway, get out of the sight of Granddad, and one of them would say, "Here, you take the bucket and go get the water," and he'd sit down there and wait. And one day, when he came back with the water, he'd pick up the bucket of water and go, "Here you are, Granddad," as if he had done the whole trip, perhaps. Well, they enjoyed doing things like that. Eddie wanted to drive the tractor, and he shoveled and unloaded about 3 or 4 tons of manure before he learned he was working, just to drive the tractor. These are good experiences. They help us through life. Though Grandma was not quite as strict with the grandson as she was with the son, I soon learned that even Grandma's house was no place to allow your eyes to be big in your stomach. When you took out food on your plate, you ate it. Didn't take very long to know and to learn, don't take out too much. We don't do that today, or some don't. Now, you might not have to come to our house if you don't want to do that. Grandpa must have known that a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty throughout. Proverbs 28:19. My grandparents were supportive of my parents, disciplined. I knew they were, too, let me tell you. If I went for a 2 weeks visit, Dad would stand beside the car with Granddad and Grandmother, and he'd say, "Now, you make that boy behave." And then he'd turn to me and he'd say, "If you don't behave, don't think I won't hear about it. And when you get back home, I'll tend to you. And you probably won't get to go back for any extended visit with your grandparents." They heeded it. I read this somewhere. Junior bit the meter man. Junior hit the cook. Junior's antisocial now, according to the book. Junior smashed the clock and laughed. Sounds like some of the kid, doesn't it? Junior hacked the tree. Destructive trends are treated in chapters 2 and 3. Junior tossed his shoes and socks out in the rain. Mischief. Oh, that's normal. Disregard the stains. Junior set Bob's shirt afire. Junior whittled Grandpa's pipe. That's to gain attention. Chapter 89. Grandpa seized the slipper and yanked Junior across his knee. He'd read nothing but the Bible since 1893. Florence and I remember good grandparents, most of whom were God-fearing people, and who taught us to do the thing that's right. I don't know how I got so little time and you had so much. What grandchild, though, would not boast of having a grandfather like Abraham? Sitting talking to other grandchildren or other siblings, "You know, my granddad was called a friend of God. He didn't hesitate when God said, take thine only son to Mount Moriah and offer him as a sacrifice. He went. That's my grandpap. The other might say, you not nothing on me. When God told my granddad, my great-granddad, great-great-granddad to build an ark, it took him a long time, but he built it. And he and his children and his wife and their wives, the children's wives, were the only ones that entered into that ark. Wouldn't you like to brag about a granddad like that? How would you feel if you had one like Ahab, lying down on a bed and turning his face to the wall and pouting because he didn't get to steal somebody's piece of property or extort it? Till finally he got his rebellious, wicked wife to intervene and cause the death of a righteous man in order that she might supply the needs of that faithless, wicked, selfish, greedy, no account. Oh, I'd hate to even mention a grandpap like that. Jacob could have, with a great deal of pride, spoken of his grandfather Abraham. Whether he knew God's reason for choosing Abraham, he most certainly was the product of God's choice to gather a great nation. God said, "For I know him to the end that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of Jehovah to do righteousness and justice." This is a mobile society. I think one of the problems that we have, and I'll close in just a minute or two, is the fact that when grandparents reach retirement age, they decide, well, I'm through. I've done my job for the church. I'm going off to Florida. I'm going to take it easy now. They leave the kids. They leave the grandparents, the grandchildren, as if to say, I want nothing more in the responsibility of helping these kids and these grandkids do what is right. Now, that isn't always the case, I know. Perhaps I'll leave the impression that I'm again indicting everybody that does that. But I remember my grandparents as being those who, when someone became ill, if they were in the family and had not the means of caring for themselves, they just moved them into their own house. And Florence's dad and mother, though they had a meager living most of the time, when Grandpa got sick and Grandma got sick, they moved them both into the house, took care of them. They didn't stop going to services. They didn't stop reading their Bibles. They didn't feel that it was a burden. They didn't complain about it. They just did it. It's a normal thing. And the grandkids learned this, and they learned service, and they learned sympathy, and they learned kindness, and they learned consideration. They learned compassion. They learned to be helpful. We must set godly examples. I don't remember ever hearing long, loose expressions of vile words from any of our parents or our grandparents. Oh, once in a while, Grandpa would get a little upset and he might say something that was a little out of the way, or Dad might. But that was not the common, ordinary thing. I have some grandchildren, though, that have a grandfather that comes to their house. He can't open his mouth without blaspheming Christ and God. I told my daughter, I think I'd tell him until he can quit it, don't come back. We need to set examples, pure speech. Wouldn't you hate to have a grandfather or a grandmother that was engaged in all the kind of licentious, wicked, vile things that are named in Romans chapter 1 and about which Brother Burt spoke today? Set a godly example. Be as careful as you can. We'll make mistakes. I've made mistakes. I'd like to use some of the things I've learned on my grandkids, on my kids, if I had the opportunity to do it again. I'd like to use some of the things I've learned in these later years of my life that I think perhaps would be better and useful. But still, we need to set godly examples. Go where you want your grandchildren to go. Do what you want your grandchildren to do. Speak like you want your grandchildren to speak. Set godly examples. Be an example of the believer is, according to Paul, for young people, but it's for old people too. Set an example. Don't say, do as I say, but rather do as I do. Well, I'll have to quit or he'll be up here after me. I appreciate your attention, good attention, and we thank you for the participation in all the lectures, and I want to express my personal appreciation to everybody that's come during this lectureship. I just learned, Emmanuel, a while ago that we have 95 congregations now represented. That's good. I don't know if that's a record or not. It may well be. Thank you.